cars of hazardous waste material as a new part of their business. Obviously, the insurance company is going to say that's an additional risk. You've got to take on additional insurance before they cancel the general line, wouldn't they?
Yes, that's my understanding of the practice. If you had an exposure that you didn't anticipate, you handle it in one of two ways. You try to go back and audit and pick up the exposure, and if you think you can cover it, you do it in terms of additional premium for the classification, or if it's something that you absolutely don't want to cover, then you would give the insured notice and cancel the policy after appropriate notice.
My reason for bringing these points up is just to indicate to the committee that the time clock on these cancellation notices doesn't simply start at the point of cancellation. Usually there's a number of procedures that occur earlier. I guess I'm not uncomfortable with the language in most cases the way it is, but I would agree that in the case of fraud, why it ought to be perhaps at the point of termination of that fraud, that it would cancel immediately, because that, to me, is a civil or a criminal act.
It's not a big deal. Okay. Representative Hanlon.
I'd just point out on that particular fraud or material misrepresentation that in applications for insurance, one fills out sometimes many, many pages, and one can inadvertently, when asked a question, respond by not knowing the total content of the question. There are ambiguities in those applications as to whether or not there is a material misrepresentation. I would think it would be reasonable to allow some time for that to be cleared up, and that the 30 days permits that either somebody is defrauding the company or not, but there's much room for argument. The other point on that, on material misrepresentation, need that be an affirmative act or just an omission that the company, insurance company then says, well, you didn't tell us this and you should have. I think there's a lot of point for ambiguity, and Representative Bunn's comment is, well, this is somebody committing almost a criminal act. I think that may not be the case, and that many of these cases may be arguable. The other point, non-payment of premium, many insurance companies, as some of you know, I know, you get a bill and you get to pay it four times a year. Even though the policy is for a year, those insurance companies will have finance companies that are separate from themselves take care of that part of it. The insurance company then will, with regard to premium, may not even necessarily know that finance company has received a premium timely and send out the cancellation. And that these questions are not quite as simple as Representative Bunn would have us absolutely believe. And I think the 30 days is perfectly reasonable under these circumstances because of that.
Okay, well, I'd like to try to reach closure on this issue. I hope we've had a chance to discuss the policy considerations and the options that I think are presented. Unless there's a need for further debate, I'm going to go ahead and call the question.
What's the question, Mr. Chairman?
Representative Bellamy, would you like to restate your motion on the amendments to the notice provisions?
Yeah, my amendment was to revert back to the old language of minimum 10 days notice of cancellation and 30 days notice of non-renewal. And it's done in two or three different sections.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, just a clarification. Representative Bellamy's motion is to move from 30 days to 10 days notice of cancellation. Change on page 4, line 23, and in other places that have been pointed out to the committee by council. Thank you.
Just a question for the chair of the motion.
Representative Dix.
The maker of the motion, excuse me. How does this affect the small businesses who received the 10-day notices a couple of years ago of cancellation and the shortened time period on renewal? If we don't increase the time.
I don't know how to respond to that. I simply believe that we are tightening down the amount of increases that an insurance company can do, and we're doing a lot of things on the other end. Well, when you talk about non-renewal, 30 days is plenty, in my opinion. And when you talk about the consumer, well over 80%, the insurance commissioners testified that well over 80% of the consumer complaints on insurance are not valid. It's simply because they didn't read their policy. So one of my responses is that if we're tightening down on the other ends of the insurance company, 10 days notice of cancellation, but you've got to understand that you usually have received one and two already notices before that on cancellation. And non-renewal, most of the time you're starting as much as 60 to 90 days before your insurance is up, you're starting to renegotiate your new line of insurance. So it isn't like today you find out tomorrow you were canceled. And I know that happened 2 or 3 years ago, but to my knowledge, that has not happened in the last year or so. At least it has not happened to a significant extent that we've had.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dix.
Just a follow-up. I think we're here today because of what occurred a year and a half ago to those folks. And my interest is allowing them to, for whatever reason they're canceled or not renewed, to have the opportunity to a cushion for themselves to go out and find insurance or find out why they were canceled or not renewed. We had testimony in the subcommittee that indicated in some instances, because of people's lack of knowledge of the law, they receive less than the notice required by law in some instances, and I thought that's why we were here. I wasn't aware of coming to this table and making sure that things were okay for the insurance companies with regard to cancellation and renewal. One of the biggest complaints I have is from people who didn't feel that they had proper notice or had the time to make alternative decisions during the crisis period that occurred. And that's really why we're supposedly at this table, is because of that crisis period that we went through on liability insurance.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bond.
I just, in responding to Representative Bauman's question on clarifying the amendment, it went beyond what she clarified. On page 5, it would also change on line 13 and line 23, the 60 days for non-renewal to 30 days for non-renewal, just to clarify.
That's correct.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Burton.
Yeah, one of the concerns I have here is that even though there is usually a lot of pre-notice on cancellation and insurance, cancellation of insurance is often a reason given by other insurance companies for not writing a policy, a cancellation of a previous policy, and it's difficult to get. I'm wondering if Representative Bellamy would be willing to accept a friendly amendment to make that 10 working days.
That'd be fine.
If that's definable in law somehow.
That would be fine with me, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Bellamy accepts as a friendly amendment 10 working days, where Representative Bellamy had moved to change 30 to 10 as it relates to cancellation timelines. Representative Miller?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hanlon may be able to answer this. I don't know, but it deals with the alleged material misrepresentation in section 37. It appears that in Section 38, there's an opportunity to have a hearing on that issue. If that's true, I guess, what is the status of the policy during the hearing, or after a request has been made for a hearing?
Representative Hamlin?
I think Mr. Miller would be better to answer that.
You want to help us out, Bob?
Section 38, it's page 4, beginning on page 4, Bob.
It would appear to me in reading through the provisions of Section 37 that the status of the policy would depend upon the particular timeline that was established for cancellation. In other words, if the timeline ran during the pendency of the hearing, the policy would be canceled if the proper notice were given.
So if you were successful at the hearing, then it would be reestablished?
It would be a matter of reinstating if you were successful. That's my interpretation.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bellamy.
Yeah, I have to say that there's one factor here that people don't realize. I've helped a small business of mine, and the company did not give proper notification. I went to the insurance commissioner, and he reinstated their insurance for one full year. And I want you to, there's one element here that we don't realize is, and that's one of the things the insurance commissioner is there, is if we have a stated policy here and the company doesn't follow it, the insurance commissioner just directly ordered for a business that would have been totally unable to get insurance, but they had it for an additional year. So the remedy is very clear. If the insurance company doesn't follow the stated law, the insurance commissioner has the authority.
Okay, I'd like to try to get the closure on this if we can. I think Representative Bellamy and Kitty had a couple other amendments. Representative Hamlin.
Just a question, does that also include 30 working days where the number is 30?
I wouldn't consider that friendly because in non-renewal, 30 days is a standard, and then you'd be having quite a deal of figuring out what 30 working days are.
Okay. Further discussion? Mr. Miller, can you refresh my memory just real briefly? What's your current rule state now in terms of cancellation?
I was trying to recall, Mr. Chairman. I believe in most instances relating to cancellation and non-renewal, the timelines are either 20 or 30 days, and I can't quote for you exactly, but I think those are the maximum timelines relating to both cancellation and non-renewal.
So if we adopt 10 days, that would be a step backwards in terms of what the current standard is pursuant to your administrative rule.
I believe so, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll on the amendments.
Mr. Chairman, my recollection, and I apologize for this, but my recollection is, as best I remember the rules, that it is not 20 days, and I wonder if there's anyone from the insurance industry that might have information on that that's here.
Hey, Mr. Monroe, you're approaching here. I think you want to get on the record and respond.
For the record, Jack Monroe with the American Insurance Association. I guess I have to go through this with Mr. Miller, who's more familiar than I am with it, but that's my turn.
Particularly interested in the cancellation
time frame. And older 30. I believe, again, Jack Monroe for the record, I believe the way the existing rules said for a midterm cancellation, which is essentially what we're talking about here, 10 days now. For a non-renewal, it's 20 days in the existing rule. And then a non-renewal or renewal with an altered term, 30 days in the existing rule. And then the existing rules go on to really not make the other terms applicable to non-payment of premium situations. So there is no timeline.
I've reviewed these with Mr. Monroe as he went through them. He's correct, and I'm wrong for the record.
Okay.
Timeline.
Further discussion? Okay, if not, the clerk will call the roll on Representative Bellamy's proposed amendments to the dash 108 amendments.
Brown?
No.
Bellamy?
Aye.
Glenn?
Aye.
Burton?
Aye.
Dix?
No.
Hanlon?
No.
Miller?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Springer?
No. Motion's adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bellamy.
In section 62, it deals with the civil penalties. Help me out with the page, staff. And, oh, here we are, page 25. The subcommittee took out $2,000 and put down $10,000 for each occurrence, and really left out the aggregate amount, which would be the total amount. And I believe this is per quarter. Is that correct? The $10,000 would be per quarter?
That was my amendment.
Representative Dix, do you want to respond?
There is no aggregate amount.
Under the amendment?
That was the amendment.
But the $10,000 would be per quarter?
No, the $10,000, up to $10,000 per fine.
Well, Mr. Chairman, clarify that. Under the original language before the amendment, the aggregate would have been a three-month aggregate. I think that's what you were referring to. So that it would have been the potential of $40,000 a year.
In fines.
In fines, that's correct.
For not complying with the law.
There's nobody but fined anyway.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bellamy.
I think the fine, in my opinion, might be a little steep, but second of all, for each occurrence, I would feel very uncomfortable about not having an aggregate per annual fine in there. If we, and I guess the point being is that if there's a case been brought to us where the commissioner should have fined an insurance company over the $40,000 a year or whatever figure you want, it'd be interesting to note. I'm uncomfortable with particularly not an aggregate amount in there.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dix.
This is the only regulatory agency that deals with insurance companies are the state insurance commissioners or whatever divisions in each state are similar to our insurance commissioner. The way the law was before we amended it, the total fines for companies that have billions of dollars in assets that can be levied against them was $40,000 a year. To set an aggregate amount is not a deterrent. The conversations we had in subcommittee indicated we hope no insurance company would violate the law. But they had better understand that if they don't comply, as for whatever reasons there has not been compliance with regard to medical malpractice reporting, they had better understand that there are severe penalties for not complying with the state laws, which are the only laws on the books to regulate the insurance companies. The insurance commissioner and the assistant insurance commissioner testified that, in fact, this was the maximum per fine, that they probably wouldn't level this penalty unless it was a severe infraction with regard to the laws. They can go anywhere between $1 and $10,000 per each of the fine. But I would argue vehemently against setting an aggregate amount in per year so that the insurance companies can write into their budget, not that this would ever happen, that the most they're going to lose is $150,000 a year in fines, $200,000 a year in fines, $250,000 a year in fines. It should be out there to protect the consumers of the state
so that they know that the only regulatory agency that exists for insurance companies, and that's the way they want it, they don't want federal regulation. The insurance company, insurance commissioner has the ability to level whatever fines he or she desires to level with regard to those violations. And that's why we adopted the amendment in subcommittee.
Representative Phillips.
Thank you. You know, if you recall the discussion in the subcommittee, I brought up the issue, just because a company happens to have $1 billion in assets worldwide doesn't mean they do $20,000 worth of premiums in this state, premium business in this state, necessarily. So just relying totally on the fact that it's a big company and therefore you can justify no aggregate, I still don't follow the logic to that.
Well, if I might pursue that.
One at a time.
Okay, if the gentleman will yield, and I'll, if I could
absolutely
pursue that.
I mean, we discussed it, for the rest of you, we went through this in subcommittee, too.
The aggregate, that taking the aggregate amount and increasing the fine, as all laws are in society, is a deterrent. My hope is that no insurance company will violate the reporting and regulations. My hope is the insurance commissioner, whether it's a he or a she, whoever it may be in the future, will level the fines according to the nature of the crime or the nature of the violation. And the aggregate needs to be taken away in order to deter those companies, so they know that the insurance commissioner has the authority to level whatever amount of money each year he or she may want to in violations of those rules and regulations. I am certain that if the case you have presented, where they don't write a great deal of insurance in this state, that would be considered in leveling the fine. And also the risk goes down of not complying if you're not writing that much insurance in this state. I mean, it's a table that drops when you don't. So
before we get too much further, can I ask Representative Bellamy, it's been suggested maybe we ought to ask you to try to tell us if you have the language to accomplish what it is you want to do in your motion, so I can place the motion and we can speak to that and then hopefully get to a vote.
Well, my original motion was going to be to lower the $10,000 to $5,000, Mr. Chair, and to include an aggregate of $100,000 in a year. Now, if you want to go quarter basis, I don't really care. I really wanted a little discussion, and we've got a little discussion on the issue in front of the subcommittee. So.
Okay. Representative Phillips has asked for a 5-minute recess.
Billy?
There's no reason why we can't just sit here and vote.
Billy?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to say something now. This committee can sit here and vote, and I'm getting a little tired of the philosophy that the rest of us who did not serve on the subcommittee don't have any brains and can't sit here and think.
Now, I hope no one suggested that, Representative Bellamy.
Well, there's a group of people that seem to think that that every time we have a little bit of a squabble, we have to have a little caucus. I'll go to caucus, but I think it's very easy. We can produce some motions, and if there's 5 votes, fine. If there's not, we can go on.
Okay, we'll be in recess to, there was a question I think asked to council in terms of subcommittee action, and we need a couple moments to do that. And Representative Bellamy, when we return, if you could give us the exact language you'd like to, I think I understood, but I want to make sure it's completely clear.
Mr. Chair, I will say this, that there, for the subcommittee, or for the rest of us that were not on the subcommittee, a little bit of discussion like we just had is a little bit helpful, so that we know what the subcommittee's basis for the decision was. And that I appreciate. Some of these issues, I may not bring up a motion after I hear the rationale that went on in subcommittee.
Okay. Thank you. We'll be in recess. House Judiciary Committee will come back to order, please. We're returning from a short recess, and hopefully within a few moments we'll have our members reassembled.
He's
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bellamy.
Seeking relief.
I am not going to move on that section.
Thank you.
Let me get to a biggie. I'm saving the little ones to...
Okay.
Using the little ones to warm us up, you understand.
Would you like some more liniment?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Bellamy.
And I would assume you would understand it. The sections 73 through 86 to deal with the joint underwriting authority. I am very, very uncomfortable with the system that was voted on by the subcommittee, and I don't think that would be a surprise to the subcommittee. Because I realize that was a major issue. It would be my...
Mr. Chairman, just apologize for interrupting. I think it's fairly critical as we go through these sections that we have the full committee here. I think we have one member...
He's coming. She's not going to find him. Take my word for it.
Okay.
Well, you never know for sure. How dedicated is the search?
Maybe she did.
Feel better?
Something you just can't hurry.
Okay.
You ought not to, anyway.
Representative Burton, Representative Bellamy, I think, has raised a question regarding the sections dealing with the joint underwriting authority, and I believe he's stating about the stated amendment, perhaps.
Section 73 through 86, I believe. Staff could help us out with the page numbers. Looks like it's page 28 through... I am uncomfortable, and it would be my proposed amendment to go back to the original language in 323s as it related to the JUAs. 323-C. And staff would have to help me. That's the only amendment that I can make at this time in terms of the technicalities as to how it should be worded, but I'm just... And I realize this was a major issue on the subcommittee, and I'm just not comfortable with the JUA that was developed by the subcommittee, the program.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bellamy.
Since I wasn't on the subcommittee either, Representative Bellamy, I'm interested in where your discomfort is. Can I get you to elaborate on what it is about the current that makes you uncomfortable?
The current proposed,
not your proposal, but what it is in the language that I'm looking at in the -08 amendments.
I'm just, and we're going to have to rely on some of the subcommittee to give us more technical stuff. But my concern is that it is a system that is. The possibility of it working is not good, and if it doesn't work, the amount of liability that the state will have in the situation can be enormous. And I think that the action that happened in one of the states on the East Coast and the liability to the state was such that I want to make sure that the thing is going to work before we initiate it. My concern comes... Very general language with the proposed system is it can be set up too quickly and too easy, and then the liability of the state can be too great if it's not done correctly.
Representative Phillips.
Thank you.
Felipe's
good. Again, I think the original bill was addressed after the Model Act, the model language, and the Senate committee did a good job with it. When we amended it, Representative Dahman, we use some language in the trigger to a JUA is the key.
Can you just guide me to that language in the bill?
Well, if you read through the series of sections in the market system JUAs and how it all works together, and the language, and I'd have to look for it, but talking about when insurance is not reasonably available and that process, and just the fact of the matter is we went into uncharted ground mostly on faith, and I don't believe that would be good policy, and especially when you look at the fact that if we're really trying to make insurance affordable and available, and you encumber the state to a huge financial obligation potentially, I think we should be very cautious.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Phillips and Bellamy, I assume you're both familiar with sections 83 and 84, which state specifically what the liabilities might be. Representative Bellamy.
Mr. Chairman, I think there are some other things that need to be pointed out. The original bill envisioned setting up first a mutual assistance program in which the insurance companies would be asked to come together and set up an ability for anyone who is having trouble finding insurance to contact the mutual assistance program and attempt to have the insurance placed. In the event that did not work effectively, the commissioner then had the authority to determine, but was not mandated to under the original bill, had the authority to look and see whether there was not the ability to find insurance and it was in industry that was needed in Oregon and providing a substantial service, and then to go into a joint underwriting association program. That kind of a mechanism that said we'll be cautious and put the mutual assistance program into place first, and if it doesn't work, go into this very complicated pooling of resources with the great risks involved only as a backup, I think was a well laid out plan. We've had test